What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Christy Francesco. Joining me, as always, is Sir George Rogers and Mr. Dean Holzapfel. But what's going on, boys?
Yep.
Yeah.
I didn't know this show was being hosted by Lash LaRue.
Lash LaRue.
So I'm sorry I was a few minutes late to getting on here, Chris. I was in the bathroom taking a leak. In the future, on your grave.
It's okay. Okay.
I'm glad you caught on that.
So
had to travel back in time.
Always comes back. Just to let everybody know, I apologize for no show last week. We had every intention of recording one, but all three of us had just crazy schedules. I mean, we're recording this tonight. Let's see, it's Tuesday night at 10:30 because George works late. But hey, you guys are getting two episodes this week because this was supposed to be well, we're doing two episodes. The second one will be sans Dean.
No. I'm just saying. Oh, you know, there's no Avalanche game the rest of this week. So
that's correct because they're headed to Lord Stanley's Cup. And this was supposed to be the first week of King of the Ring, so that was going to be 1993. We are going to be recording that at some point again during this week, maybe within the next couple of days, hopefully. Notwithstanding, I was not going to turn down the chance to get you guys New Blood Rising, which we are covering this week. There's no better way to close out WCW coverage for a few months than New Blood Rising. So thank Dean for that. It's always good to end on a high note.
So yeah, I guess that's the term.
Real quick, guys, before we get into the pay-per-view, any comments on, let's see, Edge being kicked out of his own faction after about a month? And how about what Cody Rhodes did this past Sunday at Hell in a Cell? George, I'll go to you.
I mean, the big news really is Cody, because like we knew he was injured going into the match, but he's still going to do it. But you know, Chris, I think even you said it was probably only going to be like a 5-minute banger,
right?
Kind of something to go through. But this dude turned out like a 30-minute performance with a torn pectoral.
Yeah,
like the second he took off his big American jacket, I was just like, ugh. Like yeah. even the crowd was just like, do we cheer? What do we do? Like, it looks bad, but I mean, I watched it live, and despite the fact that he was injured and, you know, obviously was limited in what he could do, somehow still turned out a great performance.
So how that goes is I had a couple of people ask me, and then I saw a lot of it on Twitter, like, oh, WWE are pieces of crap for letting him wrestle. Let me just let you guys know. This is 2022, not 1999. If there is any percentage that a wrestler cannot go per doctors in the WWE, they will get pulled from the card. No ifs, ands, or buts. This is a public company. If you have a sprained ankle and you can't go, and a doctor says it's not a good idea, Vince will pull you and you will be replaced because they value health these days. The reason why Cody Rhodes was medically cleared to perform on Sunday is the fact that it was a completely torn pectoral right off the bone, which means no matter what he did in that match, nothing was going to further damage his pec. If it was partially torn, he would have been pulled immediately because more damage can be done. So the fact that it was completely torn, you are medically cleared to go out and perform in a pro wrestling match.
I'm sure they asked him if he could go too.
Absolutely.
Once it was cleared. If he wouldn't have went out there if he couldn't go.
Right.
But then again, this guy has done everything he can to appease the fans, even kissing another man.
Yes. So, so to let everybody know also, and it was a debate, I guess you could say, on our group message, how I hated the finish, and I did. And I still stand by that. Wholeheartedly, I think Seth deserved to maybe not get the win, but what we saw on Raw.
To say about this too.
Yeah, what happened on Raw is how I think the match should have ended. It should have gotten to a point where Seth had a sledgehammer and started literally just abusing that pec muscle to where the ref just calls the match and just says, look, he can't have enough. He's had enough. You know what that does? that gives sympathy to the babyface and provides more heat for the heel that's going to be on television now every single week for the next 6 months. That's how I would have done it. I think it was bad. Look, I'm not here to always question what a billion-dollar business does, but I still think it was bad business for your number one heel on your on Raw, the number two heel in the company probably, to lose clean three big matches in a row to a babyface, because now the babyface is gone. But even if he wasn't gone, he has nothing else to overcome. Now he's an untouchable babyface, and that's not how you build a superstar babyface. Unless you're John Cena, but that he's another level of otherworldly superstars. He's a different case. He and Hogan are probably the only two cases where, you know, him winning all the time, you know, it doesn't really matter. He's just, they're so over. It's not even funny.
Except Cena does have a creative control card that he pulls.
Right.
Work for him, brother.
Right. So I know George kind of was a little bit different on the opinion that I had, which is cool. And I understand that it's fine. That's what makes, you know, us have civil conversations. We're not going to say, hey, you're a piece of crap. How dare you think otherwise? But my opinion, yeah, based,
that's about movies.
Yes. But you know, my opinion based on, you know, logic of wrestling that I've paid attention to for 30 years, I just feel that ultimately it hurts Rollins more than helps him. And that kind of proved my point on Monday. Why? Because now there's just nowhere to go. Like, where do you go with Rollins? You know, he can't talk trash because he lost three. He was pinned clean three matches in a row to the babyface. And so that's just my opinion.
It wasn't like Cody got injured in the match.
Right.
Where Seth could brag about being the reason his pec got torn. I mean, you guys know my thoughts on Seth. I think he is completely his gimmick is just garbage. It's one of the worst gimmicks I've ever seen in my life. And it's a shame because he's so good in the ring and he's so good and he's really good on the mic. And he's just wasting away as it's this dumb character flipping his hands around like he's a fucking magician and shit like that. Like it's wasted. And you know, I think if Cody was going to be here, putting Cody over Seth is, I'm perfectly fine with that, because I am at the point where I hate his gimmick so much I want him to continue to lose. But the fact that you knew going into this match that Cody was going to be gone for 6 months, there needed to be a way to garner, and now they're going to continue to feud. Like, why would I care about this feud? Seth, you lost three consecutive matches to Cody Rhodes. So you get one win back, and I'm supposed to be like, oh, well, he got his revenge. Like, I don't care. So it's like, it should have either been like a no finish, or Cody takes the pinfall, you know, to where because this is what they're going to happen. Cody's going to come back and he's going to eliminate him in the Rumble. That's exactly what's going to happen. Yeah. I said that the other day, and I'm going to stick by that. I think that's what's going to happen.
I think you're right. Yeah.
But who cares? Because Cody beat Seth three times in a row. What revenge is Cody getting on him? So but you know what it is? This happens all the time with WWE. So I don't see why we're surprised. They do this shit all the time.
Yeah. And I got to say too, when it comes to, it doesn't, who cares what Rollins does to Cody from now on? I'm not comparing the rivalry at all, but I'm just trying to say, when The Rock pinned Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania 19, everyone's like, well, The Rock finally got his revenge. Well, not really, because in the best out of three, The Rock, Stone Cold won the first two. Yeah. So the win is irrelevant. It just means something because it was Austin's last match. But
only they know about it.
Right. So if it wasn't Austin's last match, then it's a stupid storyline. It's a dumb reason for them to wrestle at WrestleMania because if that's the blow off, it doesn't matter. Austin's already won the best out of three. So that's what I mean. Like, that's where I think it hurts. George, you were kind of different, and I understand your opinion because I do agree with it also, is that at this point, Seth is kind of Teflon. What was that? That was basically your thought on that?
Yeah, Seth already has like a Hall of Fame career already. You know, in terms of accolades and what he's done in memorable moments. I mean, he's already got it. So I don't think him losing to Cody three times, I don't think it hurts him on the whole, because they don't measure wins and losses like that in WWE like they do in AEW or like Impact or something.
Sure. AEW measures wins and losses.
Well, if you listen to their fans and Tony Khan, they do. Although somehow, miraculously, Wardlow went from being the number one contender to number three in his rankings in a matter of 2 days. Funny how that works. But
he probably had a bad workout.
Maybe I'll do an eight ball and it'll make sense to me like it does their owner.
Sure.
I think what they should have done was just let Seth keep kind of stewing over it and then give him a fucking gimmick change, because he needs it in the worst way.
He needs to be the architect again.
Maybe instead of being this cackling, wearing mom's drapes as a suit kind of heel, he goes to being maybe a little more of a serious heel. Maybe you have him as the one who takes Edge and then he takes over Judgment Day. I don't know. Either way, none of this shit makes sense. I don't know what's going on. I'll watch like I do.
Yeah.
I'm not expecting gold to come out of this. I mean, if it's captivating and people are talking about it, then I guess they're doing their job.
I agree.
Because they just had the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, which people were raving about the Triple Threat women's match, which and so they should. It was a hell of a match.
Mm-hmm.
All the matches, I mean, even Bobby Lashley against Omos and MVP, it wasn't terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Riddick Moss definitely kind of came into his own during that pay-per-view, like beat the holy hell out of Baron Corbin.
Yeah.
So like, people were saying how they were just blown away by the pay-per-view because they weren't expecting much going into it.
Right.
Where on the inverse, because AEW has such great pay-per-views, everyone has such high expectation for Double or Nothing, and it completely under-delivered.
Right.
The only thing anybody was talking about was
Punk. Here we go.
Shut the fuck up. I'm trying to say a point, ass. The all they were talking about was Punk winning the title. And
yeah.
Relinquished it. So, or I don't want to say relinquished because that's not what they're doing. But once again, I didn't do any cocaine for the last 37 years, so it doesn't make sense to me.
It's just nonstop bashing of AEW. Oh
God,
man.
Shut the up. Fucking guy. People are talking about Hell in a Cell, so I mean it's generating some talk. Mm-hmm. A lot more than Double or Nothing did. So yeah. even if they're making questionable decisions, people are talking about it. And isn't that the goal, to have people talk about it?
Makes sense.
Product?
Yeah. It's always like they said, you know, people, you know, everyone questioned about John Cena. Is he really over? Well, the great thing about it is he's over more than anyone because they're always reacting. And that's the point, is get them to react. Whether they're cheering you or booing you, that means they give a shit.
It reminds me of something that Diamond Dallas Page used to say in WCW. He's like, "No, you love me, you hate me, you'll never forget me."
Yeah, that's a great quote. Yeah. All right, so let's get to the reason we are here.
The reason we're here is
we didn't talk about Edge.
The Edge thing just doesn't make any sense. I'm assuming they did it because you just lost your top babyface.
Yeah.
And if you're going to pull a baby face that's got clout and respect, I guess you're going to turn Edge.
Well, they're going to put Rhea Ripley in those trunks then. I think Chris is going to be
They clearly made that decision post Hell in a Cell.
Oh, that had to. Yeah.
Because if that would have happened pre Hell in a Cell, they would have had him lose to Finn Balor.
Although, agreed. let's see what heel Finn does, because we haven't seen this yet in WWE. I mean, I know he had a little bit, I guess, in the Indies. I didn't watch New Japan, obviously.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'll see what it does, but I think they need a mouthpiece. They need some sort of X factor. And from what we've seen of those guys, I mean, Priest is okay on the mic. He's hardly a leader. He's an enforcer.
Right.
And we haven't seen enough of him on the mic to really give a shit, because he's been this baby face ever since he's been on the main roster.
Yeah.
I mean, if he could be like the, you know, he was kind of hard in NXT when he went back, when he started doing like that 1916 DDT, the coup de grace. I mean, like that generated some buzz and kind of gave him a shot of life in the arm. But I think they need a mouthpiece.
I agree. All right, so we are here tonight to cover WCW Presents New Blood Rising. This pay-per-view occurred on August 13th in the year 2000 from the Pacific Coliseum in Vancouver, British Columbia. That's one problem, is doing a pay-per-view in Vancouver, British Columbia. Such a hotbed for pro wrestling. They should have had it in Bahrain. So this pay-per-view had a whopping 70,000 buys.
How did they go into business?
It was announced an attendance of 8,248, yet only 5,307 paid, a live gate of $123,600. I'm pretty sure Hogan probably made that much in the first 2 hours of this event, and that's how much the gate was.
56% of the people who were given free tickets decided, nah, I'm going to stay home.
Yeah, basically. Ridiculous.
They were given free tickets. You didn't have to pay. Just walk in. And they're like, nah, I'm gonna eat a can of Pringles instead.
Here's the crazy thing, and we say this all the time, how quick everything just died for WCW. And to kind of give everybody a hint here, this is 2000, so this was August of 2000. If I just go back to August of 2000 or 19, the August of 1999, which was WCW Bash at the Beach, Road Wild. That had 200,000 buys on pay-per-view. About a year later, almost to the day, we're down 130,000 buys. that to me is, I just don't know how it went, got so bad. So, I mean, I know how it got so bad so quick.
He was kind of on the wall.
Yeah. And to give everybody an idea how bad it got from here, you go a couple months later, to Starrcade 2000. Ready for this? 45,000 pay-per-view buys. The paid attendance was 2,465. So,
oh my God,
that was the lowest attended pay-per-view in WCW in its final year and 3 months was Starrcade, their number one pay-per-view.
And Starrcade is their WrestleMania.
Yeah, Starrcade that day made $84,000 at the gate.
Oh, man.
Lowest in history. it's unbelievable to think about this. It's just great.
I mean, Chris, if you want to kind of go back to August 99, I mean, in October 99 is when they got Russo.
Yep.
And Starrcade of that year is when, was that on the street? No, that was 98.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, the Finger Poke of Doom was back in January of 99. So, I mean, 99, it was all kind of going downhill. I don't even remember what happened to Starrcade 99. And I was watching WCW at the time, too.
Yeah.
I watched this shit happen.
Yeah. Then, George is that one guy that was like, oh, I'm tired of WWE. And was like, WCW's better in 1999.
Well, I was at that time, Raw was on at 9 o'clock. So I get that first hour of Nitro.
Yeah.
And contemplate drinking bleach. But I mean, and then Sold Out in 2000 is when Benoit won the title, but the next night on Nitro got stripped of it because Arn Anderson's like, well, Sid's foot was under the ropes, vacate.
Yeah.
I mean, the titles were vacated left, right, sideways. They in April is when they did that quote reboot where all of the titles got vacated by Bischoff and Russo.
Mm-hmm.
It was, mm-hmm. I mean, Bash at the Beach was a month prior to this with the, which we already covered.
Yep.
I mean, it was bad. It was like, yeah, they were trying to throw anything they could at the wall to stick, and nothing was sticking.
Yeah.
And they were just like, hey, here's another gimmick.
Yeah. So just to also put it again in a time capsule here for everybody, we just did what we just told you what the pay-per-view buys were in 1999, which was about 200,000. Just go back another year. Bash at the Beach 1998 had 525,000 pay-per-view buys, 11,000 sellout, paid sellout, and over, you know, a live gate of $315,000, you know, which, and then literally 2 years later, they're out of business. It's insane.
Chris, what was the buy rate on, what was the buy rate on this pay-per-view on New Blood Rising?
50,000 people bought this pay-per-view.
All right. So
I'm sorry, 70,000.
All right. So 3 weeks later, so 3 weeks, what the fuck is he's playing with matches?
I love the smell.
I agree with you. Mm-hmm. So 3 weeks later, their main competition, which obviously we know is the F, their buy rate was 570,000 for mm-hmm. SummerSlam 2000.
Yeah.
And that was the pay-per-view that was headlined by The Rock, Triple H, and Kurt Angle in a triple threat match. So, like, it's clear. It's like you guys couldn't even compete, and you didn't even try.
Yeah. I mean, that it's ridiculous when you want to compare. It's a $123,000 gate for WCW year compared to SummerSlam had a $1.15 million gate. Just to let you guys know also, SummerSlam's merchandise sales outdid the live gate for this pay-per-view that we're covering tonight. SummerSlam 2000.
More shirts were sold.
Yes. SummerSlam 2000 brought in a merchandise gate of $147,800. New Blood Rising generated $123,000 live gate total.
their merchandise table gained $43.72.
It's yeah. Oh my god. So
Canadian dollars too. They don't count as real dollars.
Right.
Oh my god.
So let's.
Yeah, love to hear it. You love to hear it.
It's amazing.
The tagline for this is "Our time is now."
Yes. Yes. Our time for bankruptcy is now.
John Cena saw that. There's a song there.
You know, I will say, some of this new blood. Rising in the company were pretty talented guys like Sean O'Hara, Mike Jindrak, and Chuck Palumbo were pretty good workers.
Yeah, for sure.
Sean O'Hara fan. I thought Sean O'Hara was great. Mm-hmm.
I
thought he had
it all. I thought you liked Mark Jindrak.
I don't know who that is.
He was the other guy with the bird looking face. Okay.
You mean the reflection of perfection, Mark Jindrak?
I actually thank Dean for bringing this pay-per-view up because it's fun to look at these numbers, and it's just I'm fascinated by how this business just went from 500,000 pay-per-view buys to about 2 years later to the day is basically out of business. It's just unreal.
Chris loves stats.
I love stats. Yeah.
Just give me a great sports almanac. I want to read all these stats.
Count me in. So let's go back. This pay-per-view is in August. Let's go back to April 10th of 2000, where Vince Russo and Eric Bischoff returned to WCW and immediately set about instigating a reboot of the entire company. Storylines were scrapped. All the titles were declared vacant, and war was declared on the wrestlers who had been hogging WCW's main event scene for the last couple of years. Stars like Hulk Hogan, Nash, Sting, Luger, Paige, Ric Flair were all supposed to be heels. The guys you'd want to see getting their asses kicked by a gang of young and hungry performers called, yes, you guessed it, the New Blood.
Wow.
Like many things in WCW, it just didn't work. So fans still routinely cheered for the Millionaires Club, which was Hogan and all of them, and rooted for them to kick everybody in the New Blood's ass, like every single week. Realizing they got it wrong, WCW Brain Trust let the whole thing drizzle out in about a month or two. I think it was about almost 2 months.
Problem, Chris, the reason why the New Blood was being booed and not being cheered was because everybody hated Vince Russo and Jeff Jarrett was a huge heel.
Yeah.
You can't have them lead your faction and expect to get sympathy from the crowd. You're not going to get cheers from Jeff Jarrett.
No,
sorry,
not, it's not gonna happen. So totally ignoring the fact that the New Blood had already risen, peaked, and fallen again, the company looked to replace their now defunct Road Wild brand with this New Blood Rising 2000. So let's head up to Canada and relive what happened.
Hey.
Hey.
I'm gonna get my passport stamped.
We began.
No, we're sneaking up there.
We began New Blood Rising with the obligatory video package. This one focusing on the main event rivalry between the incumbent champ Booker T and the man he beat for that title, ain't he great, Jeff Jarrett.
The chosen one.
This feud could pretty much be summed up with Booker T cut a promo in which he said, "Let's get down to business and talk seriously about being a legitimate champion who would never relinquish the belt to Double J." In response, Jarrett said the word "slap nuts," hit a bunch of people with guitars, and here we go. We have a title match.
You ever hear Jarrett talk about that? He said, like, at the time, they had him breaking, like, 3 guitars a night, so it lost all of its luster.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We then go live to the arena for the first WCW pay-per-view to emanate from Canada since the previous year's Mayhem was also the last. Tony Schiavone welcomed us to the show with his usual like hyperbole introduction before sending us to the ring for our opening contest. Fair's fair, but you'd never guess that this was a company less than a year from folding. Everything about this presentation suggested that this was a big deal. I will give him that credit. At least it did until Tank Abbott came down and danced.
Oh my God.
So what, 10 minutes?
Yeah, not even. Like, not even. 8 minutes in, I'm like, yeah, thank fucking God March is coming. we start.
That's a good one, Chris.
Thanks. Thank you, man. 6-man ladder match kicks this thing off. And, you know, with Tank Abbott starting the show off dancing, it got worse. So Abbott wore a 3-count shirt with the nipples cut out. So there's that.
Well, WCW in 2000.
Yes.
Tank Abbott do whatever he wants.
It's funny because I even wrote this down. Had they kept this a 6-man cruiserweight match, we actually might have had a really, you know, fast-paced, high-flying match that could have been probably the best match on the card, which would have been a suitable opener.
Really?
But alas, this is WCW 2000.
It's been hard.
Yeah.
Really? It's like you didn't even watch Ty Lee and Buck against Stacey Keibler.
We'll get there.
I didn't. I got it. I saw the entrances and was like, nah, I'm good. I remember this match.
After the match, Tank Abbott and his exposed nipples ran off a 3-count contract and a gold record, leaving the 3 men in the ring confused. Just what a nightmare.
Not as confused as a 6,000 attendance.
Yeah, it's 5,000. Come on.
Or the millions watching around.
The 70,000.
The hundreds watching around.
The dozens. The next match, we have the Great Muda versus one and only Ernest the Cat Miller.
I have something to say about that last match.
Go ahead, Craig.
It's one thing to have a ladder match.
Mm-hmm.
You go up, you grab a thing, and the match is over. There were 2 things hanging from the ceiling. There was a gold record. You had to get the gold record and then get the record contract. Just why? You could have just done nothing.
And yeah, don't remind us of this.
What makes this match even more embarrassing is 3 weeks later, we get the first TLC match.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're questioning a company that had a Judy Bagwell on a pole match.
Hey, spoilers.
But she wasn't on a pole. She was on a forklift.
Oh, God. So
spoilers. We'll get there. I have a lot to say about it.
So we got Great
Muda. The fact that Buff Bagwell is the best wrestler ever.
So, Ernest, you know, Great Muda, who's arguably one of the, you know, most popular wrestlers globally of all time. You got Ernest Miller, who not so much. Though it was never really explained why these two were even fighting. The announcers did vaguely insinuate that it had something to do with Muda being part of Vampiro's Dark Carnival. Whatever the reason, the actual match wasn't awful. And that's probably the best thing I could say about it. It was like the sort of match that should have just been used to kill a few minutes on Nitro. That's not to say it was bad, but let's just put it this way. If you used this as a bathroom break, then you weren't going to miss anything. So Ernest Miller is your winner on this one.
Yeah, Tigers came out and hit the worst looking chair shot since Hogan hit Conan with it. a few months.
Backstage, Buff Bagwell went looking for his mom, who Shivani told us would be up for grabs tonight in a Judy Bagwell on a pole match. Yep. Here we go. The best match of the night. Judy Bagwell on a pole slash forklift match. Positively Canyon versus Buff Bagwell. So let's do this after we take a break. We're going to take our first and only break. And when we get back, it's Judy Bagwell on a forklift. This is the Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast. I'm Chris Francesco. That's George and Dean. We will be right back to wrap up New Blood Rising right after this. Welcome back, Hot Tag Podcast. We are continuing the one and only New Blood Rising pay-per-view, literally one and only.
I see what you did there.
So here we go. Judy Bagwell on a pole match. If Canyon wins, he gets Judy Bagwell as his valet, which wouldn't make sense for Canyon, but we'll, that's neither here nor there. Still doing his best DDP impression after turning his back on Paige back at the Great American Bash, Canyon drove a forklift to the ring with Mama Bagwell tied to it. Taking to the microphone, Canyon insisted that he searched the whole world, the whole continent of Canada, for a pole big enough to hold Buff's mom, but couldn't find one.
He also called her a battle axe a couple times. And here was the funny thing is I remember them talking about, you know, having Judy Bagwell on the pole. Scott Hudson goes, we better be careful having Judy Bagwell on the pole because Mike Awesome's going to try to come out and look up her shorts.
As such, Canyon declared that this was officially now a Judy Bagwell on a forklift match. Whatever. Whatever you want to call it, it just wasn't anything special. Much like the previous Muda and Miller match, there was nothing particularly offensive about this at all. It's just that nothing interesting kind of happened until, you know, near the finish when world heavyweight champion David Arquette came out.
Excuse me, the greatest world heavyweight champion of all time.
He was on this night, he was definitely ready to rumble. He came out to try and help Canyon win. He failed, of course. Bagwell got a double Buff blockbuster, easy for me to say, on both men, winning the match and I guess winning his mom.
Chris,
what?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
In a pole match, typically when you grab the item off the pole, don't you win?
That's correct.
So why was there a pinfall in this match?
Well, you know, WCW.
I know why.
Okay. Right. Vince Russo, bro. post-match, Buff rescued his mother from the forklift truck and hugged her while his theme song sang about how sexy he was.
greatest theme song ever.
It's up there. I love that theme song so much. Only in a pro wrestling review will you guys hear a sentence like that. Speaking of hugs, Canyon embraced Arquette after the match, but then turned on him with a Canyon diamond cutter, I guess you can say.
Canyon cutter.
There you go. Out in the back, members of the Canadian Police Force and Secret Service were shown flanking a huge limousine. This was the kind of entrance you usually saw for Ric Flair or Hulk Hogan, but nope, it was just Landstorm and his many titles. After some time-killing banter from the announcers, it was on to the next match, which was WCW Tag Team Champions Chronic versus the Misfits in Action versus Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare versus the Perfect Event, whatever the fuck that is.
The Perfect Event, and let me preface real quick. Sean Stasiak and Chuck Palahniuk were calling themselves the Perfect Event because Stasiak beat Kurt Hennig in a match and was calling himself Perfect Sean Stasiak. And apparently Chuck Palumbo had some feud with Lex Luger and beat him, so he was calling himself like the main event or something. I took a nap.
Yeah, I understand. But there were four special guest referees, though. Rey Mysterio Jr., Juice, which is Juventud Guerrero, Disco Inferno, and Tigress. And here it gets even better, ladies and germs. Rey Mysterio Jr. and Juventud Guerrera came down wearing the tag team title belts. They weren't the champions. They just came down wearing the belts because, you know, WCW at this time, for some reason, did this quite often, and nobody ever talks about it.
Apparently, they stole the belts from Chronic, but yet Chronic did not come out and immediately beat their ass and take the belts.
Yeah,
they decided to go along with this dog and pony show match.
But I mean, the announcers never even mention it. There's no explanation for it in any pre-match video. It just kind of appears and it happens. And we're all just expected to kind of go with it because, you know, WCW.
I like how Conan spent 12 minutes on commentary burying 8 people.
I love Conan.
And Mark Madden kept calling him Carlos and not Conan.
The filthy animals were out here to referee. Yes, all of them. Also, at one point, Vampiro and Muda ran in and attacked Chronic. This would be important later, I guess, if you want to consider anything important. Your winners and still tag team champions were Chronic. Out in the back, Jeff Jarrett was upset that Pamela Paulshock was interviewing him instead of Mean Gene Okerlund. Jarrett didn't like Okerlund or anything, just that he liked referring to him as Jurassic Slapass and seemed a bit cross that been pissed off that he doesn't get to do that. So
the Chris, I think it's worth noting that in that tag team title match, Disco Inferno was refusing to count any falls, and the pinfall only happened when Lieutenant Loco, aka Chavo Guerrero Jr., came out, ripped the referee shirt off of Disco, vaguely threw it on himself and counted to 3, and we just accepted that as the end of the match.
Yeah, well,
Turned this pay-per-view off after that match and didn't go back to it for 2 days. I was exhausted. I needed to rest. I needed to question every decision I've ever made that led up to me watching this pay-per-view.
Responding to Paul Schock's question about tonight's main event, Jarrett gave the same promo he always gave in this era. I'm going to win the match because I'm the chosen one. I have all the stroke, slappy slap ass, slap nuts, like all that good stuff. Next match is probably Dean's favorite, the franchise Shane Douglas. With WWE Hall of Famer Torrey Wilson versus Billy Kidman, who at that point of his life was probably a hell of a salesman being married to Torrey Wilson. He has to have Thor just rocking down there. As a result, you know, Kidman had returned to be a babyface after, you know, his ill-advised heel run saw him get his ass handed to him by Brother.
he got brothered all over the place.
He got brothered everywhere. Tonight, these two men compete in a strap match in which you won by pinning your opponent, making the whole stipulation, like almost everything in WCW, pointless and stupid, because that's not a strap match. Before the bell, the franchise cut a really good promo, I thought, in which he mocked Kidman for not being man enough to keep Torrey satisfied, which ended up foreshadowing being accurate. as a character, man, I thought Douglas was on form at this time. And his promo proved to be 500 times more enjoyable than anything he and Kidman did in the ring. Neither man looked like anything was effective. And the crowd just honestly did not care once Douglas was done with the promo. And, you know, after like 4.5 minutes of nothing, Kidman won and the crowd continued not to care.
the only time the crowd reacted was when Billy Kidman took the strap and started smacking Torrey Wilson on the ass with it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then randomly Shane Douglas decided it was a good idea to put that strap around Kidman's neck and then try to hang him
in the corner. Yeah.
And then Big Vito showed up and then Reno showed
There's nothing like a save from Big Vito. meanwhile, Booker T was shown arriving at the arena and unloading his bag out of his car. It wasn't very exciting, but it's a good job the camera crew were there to film it, because otherwise we would have missed a Jeff Jarrett sneak attack. So thank God for the camera crew. So here we go. We're going to go see Vampiro for the 18th time. you know, back in Bash at the Beach 2000, Vampiro defeated the Demon, which was Gene Simmons, I guess, in a ridiculous graveyard match. Taking the old adage that if you can't beat them, join them, literally, the Gene Simmons impersonator had enlisted in Vampiro's Dark Carnival. I didn't know you enlisted in carnivals.
Dale Torborg, my friend. Yeah. World Series champion Dale Torborg.
A faction in which also included an out-of-shape Great Muta. Backstage, Pamela Paulshock reminded Vampiro that no matter what he did to Sting, the WCW icon always bounces back. Thank you, Christy Hemme. Tonight, Vampiro insisted that Sting's nine lives had run out. I had no idea Sting ever referred to himself as a cat, but that's neither here nor there. So here we go. The Demon versus Sting. It wasn't even really a match.
You skipped right over Major Guns and Miss Hancock.
I know I did. I did it on purpose.
How dare you?
I'm sorry. It wasn't even a match. Sting descended from the rafters like he used to do in 1997 and beat his opponents in 30 seconds. So the Demon didn't even get an offensive move in. Your winner is the Icon with nine lives, Sting. Afterwards, Vampiro and Muta came out to attack Sting, but Chronic came out to the rescue, seeking revenge from earlier. Chronic battered Vampiro and Muta while Sting just casually walked off.
In typical Sting fashion, not giving a shit. He just left.
He was gone.
Sold nothing, casually walked away. He's like, I'm gonna get a hot dog.
Yeah, it was so bad. The tag champs challenged the Dark Carnival to a match later on the show and even offered to put their tag titles on the line. Man, that's weird. I'm stunned. Rey Mysterio and Juventud allowed them to defend their titles later on in the night. Though we never heard from Vampiro or Muta, the announcers told us the match was official.
I guess.
Next match is the World Championship Wrestling United States Heavy, or I guess you could say Canadian Heavyweight Championship. Lance Storm versus Mike Awesome. At this particular time, I really thought Mike Awesome was really good for being, you know, his size. To me, I thought it was a crime that WCW took basically a giant crap on his career towards the end. Tonight, I thought, however, he was still pretty much the same Mike Awesome that, you know, we knew from before. And he went up against Canadian hero Lance Storm. I bet he doesn't have a Canadian faction up in Bahrain. Storm, who got the full Goldberg entrance with security and all, came to the ring with his three titles and awesome theme music. He then became Lance Storm and cut a typically dry promo in which he claimed that he was happy to finally be wrestling in front of the great Canadian fans rather than those stupid, terrible Americans. What is this? Bret Hart, 1997?
Yeah.
Naturally.
Same guy booked it.
Russo.
Yep, same guy booked it. You're right. Naturally, Lance was insanely over. In fact, I'd probably go as far as to say this was probably the most over he was ever in his career. But you know who else was over? Bret the Hitman Hart. The crowd chanted the Hitman's name after the Canadian champion announced that he had recruited a Canadian legend to serve as a special guest referee to ensure that Canadian rule book was adhered to. You could literally hear the crowd become deflated when that Canadian legend was Jacques Rougeau. There's a fucking legend for you, Canada.
Hey, he's got a pinfall win over Hulk Hogan.
That's a good point.
Bret Hart doesn't have a pinfall win over Hulk
Hogan. Oh, man. I'm not even sure Bret Hart has a pinfall win over Shawn Michaels. last seen on pay-per-view back at WrestleMania 14, Rougeau stood by as a champion challenger entered in a spirited performance. I thought it was a really good match, some pretty good high-impact moves. Afterwards, though, the Canadian god himself, Bret the Hitman Hart's music hit, and one Canadian hero everyone really wanted to see made his way to the ring. This motherfucker was making $3 million a year to show up in a Mike Awesome and Lance Storm blow off crap fest.
And his brain was dead by this point too, because Goldberg had brothered him.
Oh right, yeah. He's mush walking down to that ring.
He was a bowl of oatmeal. Just like, hey, where am I?
You got some steel oats down here.
Cucumber, British Columbia. Never heard of her.
This is a perfect time probably to see Vampiro again. It looked as though the hitman would, you know, call out his fellow countrymen for their shenanigans, but instead he smiled and gave them a big hug because I'm sure he thought he was at like a Thanksgiving dinner at the Heart Dungeon because he had no idea where the hell he was.
Dear Lord.
But you know what we haven't seen enough of tonight? Vampiro. Apparently, not to worry, kids.
Apparently, he is the blood that was rising.
However, though, kids, if you send a copy of your cable bill showing that you purchased this pay-per-view, WCW would send you a free Vampiro shirt. That's pretty damn cool, right? Just saying. Sure. Speaking of which.
Is it a licensed Vampiro shirt, or is it just a white t-shirt with Vampiro written on it in Sharpie?
It's gonna go to the winner of the contest to manage Bill Goldberg in a match in the future. Speaking of which, former Big Daddy Cool Kevin Nash was standing backstage with Pamela Paulshock. He probably banged her. Pamela noted that Goldberg.
If he didn't, he at least fingered her.
Oh, dear God. Pamela noted that
he was doing that. He's making that sound effect while he was doing it.
Pamela noted that Goldberg hadn't yet arrived for his scheduled three-way dance with Nash and Scott Steiner, but Pamela did. But Big Sexy did not care. In a short but decent promo, Nash claimed that he was only in pro wrestling for the money. That was fucking obvious in 1996. And the title that he would beat Steiner anyway tonight to get a title shot. Actually, he didn't even say he beat him. He said he was going over, brother. Because according to WCW logic, there was nothing cooler than using insider terms on television. Yeah, all 70,000 people loved it.
It's funny. It's almost like it's back again.
World Championship Wrestling Tag Team Championship again. WCW Tag Champs Chronic versus the Dark Carnival, which is Vampiro and the Great Muta.
Chris, I'm so tired.
I know, man. Dude. Dean said, like, my enthusiasm was, like, just hanging out. Like, this is what I have to try and do here. I'm trying my best. I'm even doing jokes.
We skipped an entire match.
I know.
I'm so tired. We're going to talk about that. You're not getting away from that.
Here we go. Oh, look, it's Vampiro and the Great Muta again. Haven't seen them for about 12 minutes.
It's been a long time.
Also, I did realize that the Dark Carnival's theme music was the ICP song Take It from the Mayhem album. So I had to put two and two together there.
Yes, it sounded familiar. ICP was in the Dark Carnival also.
Right. Yeah. Wow.
Which I think around this time, and it may have been before this, Mike Awesome gave Shaggy Two-Dip an Awesome Bomb on top of his 70s bus. Ugh. And Shaggy Two-Dip fell off the top of it.
Oh, God.
And Mike Awesome tried to catch him. I watched that live.
My man. TV.
It was, there were other things on, Chris, I could have watched.
You could have.
Could have watched Nick at Night.
I know. The best I could probably say about this match is that it was just okay. Nothing particularly bad about it. Nothing great about it. Just straight meh. Muta hit a moonsault. Mickey, the referee, Mickey J, whatever, got the three count. New tag champs. As you could tell by going through the rest of the pay-per-view, it was inevitable that Vampiro and the Great Muta were going to win something. Backstage, Booker T told Pamela Paulshock that he's coming for you. Oh, wait, that was a different promo. Booker T told Pamela Paulshock that Jeff Jarrett would have to kill him if he wanted his title. This was followed by a brief video package for an upcoming three-way. And no, it's not, you know, another kind of entertainment. Here we go. Three-way match, which was Kevin Nash versus Scott Steiner versus Goldberg. Maybe. If they just left this alone as a straightforward singles match between the two former NWO members, which was Steiner and Nash, it probably would have been a solid big man match. However, this was WCW, so everything has to be convoluted as all hell. So they had to mess things up by throwing in Goldberg because maybe backstage Russo wanted Steiner to get Bret Harted by Goldberg. I don't know. The match was billed as a triple threat, but Goldberg didn't come out when he was announced, leaving Steiner and Nash to go at it. Eventually, Big Bill arrived, sporting bandaged ribs, a la DDP after a kayfabe motorcycle accident. And then, you know, before Goldberg decided that he didn't want to be powerbombed by Kevin Nash, he went off script by walking back. He was then confronted by Vince Russo, a very, very powerful figure, who demanded the former champion get back in the ring. Instead, on television, Bill yelled "fuck you" very loudly at Russo, and it's amazing that the WWE has yet to censor that out, by the way.
You know, I can't imagine why he went out of business.
I know. Back in the ring, Steiner and Nash continued the brawl, giving us a pretty decent effort that Big Sexy eventually won with a powerbomb. Your winner is Kevin Nash. No shock there. And here we go into our main event. WCW World Heavyweight Champion Booker T versus Jeff Jarrett. Though it was nowhere near their main event standards, this was otherwise a pretty decent match. It would have been even better if Booker T had remembered how to sell anything. After slamming the champion's leg in a car door earlier in the show, Jarrett spent the first two-thirds of the match working the same body part. Booker was fine with this when he was on the defense, but as soon as he went on the attack, it was as if the leg made an instant miraculous recovery. It was just so noticeable and so stupid that it did kind of take me out of the match, like so much so that it was hard to even care when the final third broke down with like multiple like big bumps and overbooking. It's just like, but I thought Booker should have like a damaged leg from the entire night and into this match. But you know, Booker now has fully healed legs, one with the bookend. But by that point, man, the crowd was just so fed up and they were literally hurling garbage into the ring. Your winner and still champion Booker T. Apparently, afterwards, though, the champ did remember that his leg hurt, so he started limping off. So out of 10, boys, I'm giving this a 1.5, and I'm judging this as the worst wrestling pay-per-view of all time. George?
I don't think I can give this a lower score than 0. It's a straight 0. No chaser, no fail. This should have been nothing. This shouldn't even have been an episode of Thunder. It was at all. And the match we skipped was Major Guns versus Miss Hancock in a quote mud rip off the clothes match, and it was just bad all over. And then it ended, and I remember saying, like, what is, I was like, why is she holding her? I'm like, oh, that's right. They played that miscarriage angle because,
that was just so bad.
But then it turned out she was faking the pregnancy because of David Flay. It was a whole thing. And Mark Madden sounded worse than Jerry Lawler when Jerry Lawler would call women.
Oh, I know. It was like uncomfortable.
Pretty hard out perfect king.
Yeah, I know. Dean, your thoughts on this?
0.
Oh man.
pay-per-view was awful. Every sense of the word.
Yeah.
And you're welcome.
You are welcome. Oh man. So let's see here. That wraps up New Blood Rising, and it wraps up our WCW coverage. So I thank you guys for picking the last two, and I'm grateful that you guys have been around for the month and a half that we did, almost 2 months actually, of all WCW pay-per-views. However,
are we going to do more?
Oh yeah, once probably starting in September, because once we get, I might do one in July. We'll see. I might want to do like another bash at the beach. Probably the one where the NWO was formed, of course. I definitely want to go over that one in July. But then you got SummerSlams that we're going to cover in August. And then once like September, October comes, then we'll start hitting like Halloween Havocs and all that.
If I get a chance to choose another one, I'll promise to choose a good one.
Well, this was great. I love talking about it. It's just so tiring. Beginning
the credits was tiring.
Oh my god. Once I saw Tank Abbott with nipples popping out of a t-shirt, it was really difficult.
When you asked me to pick this and I started watching it and it came up, it was, you know, it was like new blood runs. I was like, what have I done?
You looked at a mirror and said, why are you the way that you are?
You're like, he was like Anakin Skywalker after he chopped Dooku's head off. What have I done?
No, that was after he chopped off hand.
So as this drops within the next couple of days, we are going to be starting our King of the Ring coverage on time, which is, I thank the boys for making time for that. So here's what's on the docket for all of June and probably the first week of July. It's King of the Ring 1993, which is the original. Then we're going to do King of the Ring 95. King of the Ring 96, 98, and then 2001. So we have a lot of great WWF spectaculars coming down the pike here. So I want to thank you guys very much for that. This has been the Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast. You guys can follow us on Instagram at Hot Tag Podcast. Check us out there for show updates and what's going to be coming up and how you guys could probably get involved as well. Starting this week, I guess, the first show, I'm going to start answering fan questions because I get them all the time and I just don't get a chance to answer them. But I do have some questions I'm going to start shooting out and answering beginning this week. So thank you guys. Keep sending in your questions. I really appreciate it. All right. So for George Rogers and Spaceman Dean Holzapple, I'm Christy Francesco, and I'll catch you guys down the road. Have a great one. Bye-bye.